asked, I took an informal survey on our church's Facebook page. I asked folks, where is it that you like to find fish? What's the best place to buy fish in our community? The top choice, can you guess what the top choice was? H Mart, which makes sense, the pet store. Because H Mart's, if you're in Leonia, it's the only grocery store here. And also because, as I understand it, they bring in fish daily from the Fulton Fish Market. But there's also preferences for other places. 99 Ranch, which is a Chinese grocery store in Hackensack, and Whole Foods. ShopRite, with special props to the man at the counter who will give you recipes if you ask for them. And Seafood Gourmet in Maywood, and a couple of restaurants were mentioned as well. But I know that some of the Japanese church members here insist that you cannot find fish fresher in this area than the fish at Matsua. I'm in my second year of teaching in the English Conversation Family class we offer at this church. We alternate, I teach alongside with Michael Hinton, and we alternate between singing an English song that often involves movement that helps little bodies get engaged. And then we share a question where one member of the group asks a question to the other people in the group, and they have to practice their English as they answer. One of the most common questions we get early in the semester is, where do you go to buy food? I can assure you, especially when you're far from your hometown, finding the foods that feel familiar is one of the most important tasks to feeling settled in your new community. Not only figuring out which store has the best fish, but also how to get there and how to speak to the people who work there if their language is not your own is one of your first challenges for surviving in a new city. The truth is, most people who immigrate to the United States at this point in time are fishing for something, and their hopes have been big enough to risk casting their nets further from home. Hopes for better jobs, hopes for better education, hopes for freedom from violence or persecution, hopes for love, perhaps. Some find what they were fishing for, and some may not, at least not right away. If you follow Jesus, you aren't going to sail in the usual places always or catch the usual yield you expect of fish. I learned in seminary that Luke's gospel and the Acts of the Apostles were written by the same person or group of people. One of the main struggles in the early church in Acts is whether the Jesus movement could expand enough to allow uncircumcised Gentiles to be part of the community. So the casting of nets into deeper waters was a sign that God's community would not come from the expected places or expected ways of knowing God. There are far more fish out there than the disciples ever imagined, and only by following Jesus would they find them. And did you know that in the very early Christian church, the first symbol for the Christians, it wasn't a cross. That didn't come until the 4th century. The first symbol was a sign of the fish. This gospel story also teaches a trust in God's abundance, so much that you could even walk away from it all. So much of what we do from day to day, whether it is shopping for just the right fish, or hopping on a bus to spend another day at work, or bringing home good grades, is centered around providing for our household, pleasing those inside of it, and building a pathway to a future that is even more prosperous for yourself and your loved ones. But Jesus seems to be saying that there's an even bigger goal to value than prosperity for yourself or for your family. If we trust Jesus enough to not just provide for our own, but provide for a community larger than those we live with, our nets will be very, very full. I asked my friend Diana Pems about fishing traditions among the Yakima Indian Reservation. Some of you remember Diana if you went on a mission trip in 2017 to Campbell Farm on the reservation, which is a Presbyterian ministry among the Yakima people and led by Yakima people. Diana and her mom, Carmenita, run the program. I had remembered Diana telling me that the salmon had a spiritual significance to the people and were central to their livelihood. And so I asked Diana yesterday to tell me more. Here's what she said. Salmon runs happen twice a year, fall and spring, when mature salmon swim from the ocean upriver to spawn or lay eggs in the same waters where their lives began. And they always know the exact spot where their lives began. These seasons mark the time for gathering of roots and salmon in the spring and for berries and salmon in the fall. Diana tells me that before you go out on any kind of salmon run or even root or berry expedition, you must offer the first of the season's berries, of the season's roots, and of the season's salmon at feast in the longhouse. The longhouse is the spiritual and cultural center of the community's traditions for the tribe. At feast, you prepare yourself. You give thanks. You humble yourself before your Creator. And only then are you permitted to go out to hunt or gather. And whatever is left over at the feast of the fish that cannot be eaten, the bones and the guts of the fish, is thrown back into the river as a way of nourishing the river so that the next season's salmon run will be rich. Salmon hunting belongs to every family. Traditionally, fishing among the Yakima is not a specialized trade. If you are able-bodied, you go out to fish. Fishing is not in a boat, like Jesus and the disciples were doing, but on scaffolding platforms along the river. You drop your nets in, and whatever you'd pull out would feed your family and the tribal people, and they consider their table as welcome and wide. And what you can't eat now, you dry or ground up to eat later when the season doesn't offer as much abundant food. Sharing with vulnerable members of the community, people who don't have someone at home who can go out and fish, is common and expected. Whatever's left over can then be traded and sold. As Diana shared these fishing traditions with me, I was struck by how much honor the people hold for these fish and for the waters they travel, and how the fish in turn honors their community. These days, there are very strict laws about fishing of salmon in Washington state, with good reason. Commercial fishing practices have dramatically decreased the numbers of wild salmon. Warmer water temperature invites pests like sea lice, and those pests endanger the life of the salmon and have even made some groups of wild salmon extinct. Diana said that while the traditional time for fishing was in the early spring and early fall, because of global warming, the seasons have shifted, and now they look more like the late fall and early winter, which then leaves a long stretch of time when there are no fish. In the past 3 to 4 years, she's noticed a difference. The salmon run in the fall brings more fish than in the spring, whereas the history had it the other way around, and neither fall nor spring brings in as much fish as it used to. Even though Washington State has strict guidelines for the fishing of salmon, persons belonging to indigenous tribes rightfully have no restrictions placed on their fishing. This allowance aims to honor their right to the land and waterways as first inhabitants, and their methods of fishing have long honored the earth's rhythms and practices that encourage the sustaining of the fish populations they cherish. We, as disciples of Jesus Christ, fishers of people, can learn something about evangelism from the sustainable fishing practices of the Yakima, and also from today's gospel. Whatever we fish for, we must not be too greedy. Notice the disciples, as they followed Jesus in search of people, did not drag their overflowing nets of fish along with them. No, they abandoned them, left them at shore, presumably where some other happy fishers would rejoice at their easy haul. Can you imagine if they tried to follow Jesus with all those fish? Before they could do anything, they would have to try to get it to market and make some money off of it, or maybe preserve it, which is a very long and intensive process. If that had been the case, I wonder what they would have missed. The healing of the man with leprosy? Jesus sharing a meal with a tax collector? The Sermon on the Mount? In the history of Christian missions, too often people calling themselves disciples have tried to fish for people for Jesus Christ while also taking far more than their share of the abundance of fish at the same time. We have converted many cultures and lands to Christianity while also taking their gold, their oil, their land, and sometimes even their people. When we want to expand the water where we fish, sometimes we must also be willing to leave the fish behind. Now back to present day reality. Once we've found fish, whether at H Mart, Mitsua, or the Yakima River, the question remains, how will we prepare the fish to be served? Will we serve it raw, as in sashimi? Or will we cook it? Will we stick to the old family favorites, tried and true recipes, or will we try something new? I'm so thankful that Chris cooked the dish from our household today, Philippine-style chicken adobo, because I do not know as well as Chris how to cook Filipino food. I also know that Chris cooked it under pressure, not because she used an Instapot, but with the presence of her parents who are staying with us this weekend, who have a very clear picture or in their mouths of how adobo must taste and how it must be prepared. In an essay called Recreating Our Mother's Dishes, Asian and Asian North American Women's Pedagogy, Korean American writer Boyoung Lee spoke of this anxiety as she describes making traditional Korean foods. Even following the Korean cookbooks, she could not get the taste just right. Her mother said that just as important as high-quality ingredients and the exact quantities is something that you cannot find in a book. It is something that in Korean is called sonmat. Am I saying that right? Sonmat. Which literally means the taste of one's hands. A cook's hands decide the flavor of the food. Just as we might ask how we will prepare the fish we find, we must also ask the question of how we will prepare the people we find as Christianity is shared among us. Some Christians would say that it is wrong, even a heresy, to have in a Christian sanctuary the symbols of the Lunar New Year. For the rituals around the New Year center around other gods, center around ancestor worship, and other practices some might say are not Christian. However, if we are to prepare our disciples with sonmat, that is, the flavor of the hands that are within the community, it makes good sense to share something that is so deep and rich within a culture with who we are as Christians. The drumbeat of Manhattan Taiko is as much a sharing of our hearts with God as is singing a hymn written by Martin Luther. Jesus does not cause us to catch just one kind of fish, nor does Jesus call to fish for one kind of people. I believe that the feast out there will be ready soon, and I can assure you that there will be many, many different flavors. May our thoughts and words, our songs, and our drumbeat be the preparation we need to be spiritually ready to share in the great feast. Amen.